Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Straight to the Point, completely off topic. I've got Boneface, Ink Master Season 8 and Season 9 contestant with me today. Also, rapper extraordinaire. He probably writes romance novels and as well. I think the guy's got his hands in a lot of different things, property management, something. But at any rate, how are you doing today, Boneface?
Man, I'm great, man. How are you, bro?
I'm fantastic. And we'll get to, of course, we got to talk about Ink Master. That's the whole reason they listen to me. But okay. Let me ask, you are a rapper as well, right?
Yes, I was doing music before I did anything. I've always been an artist, and I've always been in music. I've been doing music since I was probably about 10, 12 years old. And I actually have had a couple record deals, too. So tattooing is just the thing that broke for me first. But music was my first love.
Where's the name come from? Mom didn't name you Boneface.
Nah, man, it actually was a funny thing. And you know how you grow up and you kind of pick up nicknames from your friends cracking jokes and shit on you. So funny story, I was in the Wendy's and my manager was friends with my older brother, childhood friends with my older brother. And at the time I was probably about 140 pounds, 150 pounds. And I didn't have a beard then either. I had like a little goatee, but you could see my facial structure and it was kind of real sunken in, like at the cheekbones. And she called me Boneface and I was just like, damn, that's kind of catchy. And I ran with it.
You went with it right away. You liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was catchy. And I just, right, yeah, on. I believe, you know,
140 pounds. You're over 6 feet. Were you 6 feet then?
Yeah, I was 6 foot tall, 140 pounds. So I looked like a walking skeleton at the time.
Okay, right. Is the beard, I was going to think that the beard was an answer to the bone face structure, but I'm sure that's changed over time too. You put some weight on since then.
Yeah. The beard came a couple years later. I've had this name since I was 14, 15. So that was like my first job. That's when I got the name.
And you were probably, that's the age that you're looking for a name for rapping and all anyways.
Exactly.
So you got it from Wendy's? Is that what?
Yeah, I found my name in the Wendy's at the grill, flipping burgers.
I have not been so lucky, man. Just chicken nuggets so far. Yeah, they call me that one annoying guy at the window. That's my rap name. If I had to get it from Wendy's. The guy that wants to talk to your manager. No, I want pickles on that, so you have to make it fresh. Don't you take one back and put the... So how was your experience on Ink Master? We get to see it, you know, honestly, let me give my own premise for anybody that didn't see your episode. They eventually crafted such a monster with Ink Master that they were making money that they could literally throw it around. So they gave you guys paintball guns full of powdered dust and had you have a tag team war or something.
Yes, like for the intro.
That was a part of it. See, when we did our first, well, I'm going to sound like a grandfather or something, but when we did our first intro and all the press pictures the same day that you guys had this awesome day, it sounds like, we the first season that I was on, season three, we took it all inside of the studio there. They set up a picture and they had a bunch of weird people run around. They went over a bunch of stuff with us, but that was that day. And then the next year I could see that they must've been a success because they stopped traffic underneath the Manhattan Bridge and they took pictures all night fucking long. I mean, crazy. But now we've gotten to the penultimate of Ink Master intros where they have so much money that they're literally like, I don't know, man, what do we have them do? Like flamethrowers filled with powdered paint.
that was probably the best day I've had on set with them. Super dope, super fun experience. And it didn't feel like work, of course, like the other days. And I think our season was the first season that they really decided they wanted to spend a whole lot of money. So that was good for me. And that's why I think so many people from our series have elevated to other things. Like people got their own shows from our series. And I think that was the first time for that ever happened to where somebody came from a series and had their own show.
Well, Tommy Helm, I guess he kind of got helped out with Big Gus, didn't he? Because he was on Tattoo Nightmares. But you mean then Ryan Ashley in the Ink Angels or something, right?
A show from the same production company, So I think the Tattoo Nightmares, it was on a different network. But this is this was something that sprung from Ink Master. It's just like a whole different show from one show to where we recognize these girls from this, and this is how they got famous, and we give them their own show from that. So I thought that was dope. They definitely went all out. It seemed like the brand kind of really went crazy after season 8. And I think because they had this the first time a female won, I think that helped too, boost the brand a lot too.
Right. Do you think that's something that they wanted to have happen?
I think it is. I think the way this show is
structured. Because if it boosted the brand, then we could imagine somebody might have recognized how that could also boost the brand.
1,000%. And I do feel like a lot of people ask, is it scripted or is it staged? And I don't believe it's scripted or staged, but I do feel like they position certain things and they understand the outcome of it. If I put you in a position where somebody's antagonizing you, I understand that you're going to fight back once I know your personality. So I think they put enough women who were talented on the show and they that kind of put them in position to get the female winner that they wanted. And because it was like most of the talent, the most talented people on that season were the women, just to be honest,
Right.
So it's like they kind of positioned it for that. And I think Gian was a monkey wrench in that plan because he was so good. And
the kid is talented. Sketchy Lawyer was real good too, but he's kind of good at his own thing, right?
Yeah, I think he's good all the way around, but the mental part of it is what he wasn't good at. He struggled with the, being in the house, and he struggled with the setup because, naturally tattoo artists are rebellious and they move how they want to move. And you're in a situation where you're being babysat and you're being monitored 24/7 and told what to do. And that doesn't sit well with somebody who kind of works for himself every day.
So he
broke on that end, but I think where it came, where the female part of it played in is that if it was a 50-50 situation between you and the female, you were going home because we're pushing for a female to win this. We're not going to cheat for them. But if we have to choose between one or the other and it's even, we're going to choose them because it's better for the narrative. So even at the end, I felt like Gian and Ryan, mm-hmm. their tattoos were kind of like it could have gone either way. So I kind of knew which way it would go once he put himself in that position. You had to win by a landslide to be a dude that season.
Right. Right. Counter to some narratives, most I kind of have and maybe it's such a maybe this is completely chauvinistic, but my opinion kind of is female tattoo artists, as I have seen throughout my life, have struggled greatly. As my wife was a tattoo artist, and when she would do the whole consult, the setup, the work with the person personally, I'd be tattooing, and she would work with them on their tattoos. She's drawing the stencil and getting it ready. She already set up the whole thing, and then he would look at her and say, "So when he's done with that tattoo, he's going to do this tattoo," and she would say, "No, I'm going to do the tattoo." You fucking chauvinistic piece of shit.
Right.
And then Kat Von D happened. And I kind of have an opinion, and it's probably just the chauvinist in me, but the struggle that you had to have as a female tattoo artist is it all changed after Kat Von D.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was popular enough that suddenly people wanted female tattoo artists. And now I just don't feel like it's as hard as it was, and almost even in many cases easier if you're willing to use your attributes as a female to your advantage.
You're leaning towards what I think. I think there are disadvantages and advantages to everything, bro. And I just think you can focus on the disadvantages or you can focus on the advantages. Just like as me, right? I'm a black tattoo artist. There are advantages to that and there are disadvantages to it. It's just like, which ones do you want to embrace? And I think in a lot of situations, people, when they feel like something is not going in their favor, they focus on the disadvantages. When everything is going in their favor, they focus on the advantages. You feel what I'm saying? So I think there are advantages to being a female tattoo artist. I think for the same reason, because when I first started tattooing, I wasn't that great of a tattoo artist, but I felt like I was a handsome guy and women hit on me a lot. So I felt like a lot of my clientele came from women just wanting to be around me. And I think that happens with a lot of female tattoo artists, right? Yes, right. It may be wrong and it may be chauvinist, but at the end of the day, it's bringing money in. So there's always something that brings money in, because at the end of the day, bro, there's always a tattoo artist out there better than you. And there's always, so people come to you for an experience. When they come to Kyle Dunbar, they come to you for that experience of you. And when you're a female tattoo artist, you being attractive or unattractive will play a role in that. And that's just like life in general. I think attractive people, it sucks to say this, but attractive people have an advantage in life and unattractive people have to work harder. So if you're a female tattoo artist that's unattractive, usually you'll hear those are the guys complaining about it. It's not really a situation where you have this hot female tattoo baby ain't complaining.
Right.
You feel me?
Right. Right. Yeah, at the same time, Tattoo Baby, uniquely, I met when she was so young in Miami, mm-hmm. getting ready to do a tattoo, and she was going by the name Kat, and she had been tattooing for a little while, and Kat Von D was coming out at that time. And mm-hmm. so she had this weird kind of like it felt like it almost boxed her in and stole mm-hmm. her persona. But at the same time, she loved to do black and gray portrait work. So it didn't mm-hmm. hurt her progression, you know what I mean?
People would let her
do it almost because, like, oh wow, her name's Kat too,
right?
Go by Kat,
right. It's just the tattoo world is a strange place, bro, and how things work, it varies, you know. It's just like you just got to figure out your niche and what works for you and ride that wave and not focus on what doesn't work for you. Everybody has a complaint, you know, so it's like there's some things you could complain about, but it's not recognized, you know, because people focus on the advantages that you do have, you know?
Right.
So,
right. I don't stop complaining about it though. Trust me. I'm still.
Yeah. Most people don't.
Right. I probably should. What is it? I was talking with a friend, you know, Mark Matthews, his whole name is Manifest Mark. And I guess if I'm focusing on complaints or looking for things to complain about, then I'm not going to have nearly as good a time. And I'm probably gonna go down. I'm slowly figuring it out. That's what I can say.
Right.
Talking to people like yourself who have to have a philosophy, even as to be a rapper of some sorts or want to continue to do that, whether it be a positive one or a negative one, you have to kind of have mm-hmm. a philosophy, right?
Right. And whether it's positive or negative, as long as that philosophy drives you to keep going, to grow at what you're doing, go for it. You feel me? If you're a female that feels like tattooing is hard for women and that drives you, use it. If you're a female that feels the opposite, use that too. It's just whatever the fuck you feel, you got to use it as fuel.
Right. And then, but did you get any heat then? I mean, not that this is so related, but from asking the girl why she looked 50 when she was 24.
I didn't get much as one person should, because I'm one of those people that feel like when that happened, it's almost like hitting a girl, you know, and hitting a woman is never justified. But if you're watching a woman assault a man, and it's like he's trying to get away, and she pulls out a knife and she's trying to cut him, and then he hits her, then you kind of like, damn, it's sad that he had to hit her, but I understand. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was like one of those situations with me, because it took so long for me to retaliate. If you watch our season, you'll see that it was like something that she worked on and she pushed for the whole time. So when it happened, it was more, everybody reacted almost like finally versus like that was harsh. Only her fans felt like it was harsh, you know?
I understand.
I blew up on
a girl there, and everybody was like, dude, I'm glad you did it instead of me.
Right. That's what it was for me. It was almost like everybody in the house, it was whispering like, damn, bro, that was harsh, but she kind of deserved it. Even the producers. And I'm just like, after it happened, I apologized to her, of course, because
that's just bad.
It's not my character. And
and you knew that it was 100%. You're like, 100%, that is going to make it.
Absolutely. And that's what they said. After I said it, one of the guys was like, well, maybe they won't use it. And then one of the producers walked by and said, nah, that's going to be the trailer. I was like, fuck.
Yep. Yeah.
I was like, damn.
Was it the trailer too?
It was the trailer. Ah. Yeah. So that's what that's what kind of sparked up the bad blood again, because we were good after that. Like, we got to a space to where we were cordial, but you know, once it resurfaces and people kind of pour fuel on the fire, it goes back to where it was. You know, you're human, so you start to relive that shit over and over again. But you know, like,
it sounds philosophy as a rapper is definitely one of foresight or of reflection.
No, absolutely, bro. I'm just, that's my character in general, not just as a person in general. It's like, I'm never going to do something to somebody that I don't want done to me. You feel what I'm saying? But she just put me in a situation to where it was almost like she wasn't considering any of the things that she was doing to me and how it would affect me when I went home. Because at the end of the day, we all run businesses and we all have to go home and work. So even when I apologized, I broke down to her and made her understand why I said what I said and why I made it a personal attack versus a tattoo attack, because I had no problem with them saying my work wasn't good. I didn't have a problem with that. The issue was, is that every attack was personal. Imagine you've been in that house and you've been in critiques to where you do a tattoo and you know that your tattoo is not close to the worst one in the room, but for some reason, these people are harping on yours, but they're not saying anything about the other one.
Right. I've even been in the room when I haven't been the point of that. And you sit by almost enabling it because of a couple of reasons, but one of them is, you know, they need footage and they're going to shoot until they get it. Another one is, why interject and get the focus on me from all this negativity? But if you're the subject of it, so like it no one's necessarily running to your defense, I guess is what I'm saying. Because if they run to your defense, they know that they are possibly a target, or there's an imagined alliance because certainly on your season, if they improved in their budget, they also got to improve in their salary cap, you know, in their ability to pay producers and get people from better shows, you know, from places like The Real World and, you know, Survivor or whatever, places where they really push drama. America's Top Model, you know, these kinds of, so these producers then are more skilled because they have more, you know, more money. They have more resources to spend on for better skilled people. Eventually, they end up with a script that it wasn't the first time. I mean, we had Rivals already, and I don't think we had Shop Wars yet, did we? But no, this was the script. It was guaranteed to make internal drama. Every bit of it. And once you get there, too, I mean, I remember going with some really, you know, wide-eyed kind of aspirations of being involved in a fair competition and getting to find out where I was at with inside of, you know, my competitive field. And we were going to make a TV show in the process. This was, I have to learn how to be a reality TV star performer. I need to learn to speak sound bites so that they want me to stay here. It seemed like. And from my own perspective, when you were being attacked and you retorted with that, you were being attacked. That's why I say it like that. You were being attacked. A girl was also pointing her finger at you, you know, like which I always take as, I mean, if I just remove all sound, going back to us being the most primate motherfuckers in the world. Like, if I watched a bunch of monkeys in the jungle and one of them starts pointing at the motherfucker and three other of them start jumping around, you know, making a bunch of noise, I know what's happening. And that ain't necessarily a one-on-one fight or necessarily a fair fight. So I think a lot of people felt that, too. So you must have I'm wondering that I know that must be what helped you escape some of the Twitter ire, if that was a thing.
Yeah, that it did. But another thing is that during that time, I'm not a read the comments type of guy. So I never really felt anything that came with it, because I never really got into it. I never reposted it. I've never gone into the comments to see what they said, or, you know, so
didn't it's just, feed I don't even into know how, the drama.
Right. I don't even know how people feel about me, and I don't care. I never got concerned with it, you know, so I did what I did. And I apologized for it. Me and her killed it. And after that, I was cool with whatever. You know, the world is kind of late. They're on the back end of it. They catching the backside of the whole situation or whatever. But right. you explained it perfectly. It was just a situation where I was being attacked, but it's almost like we didn't see the person antagonizing you. We just seen you fire back. So it's like we didn't see what led up to it. So it was just almost one of those things to where I was being attacked for weeks, and this was not just on air. This was inside the house, and I was just like, my whole time I'm thinking like, damn, do they want me to be the angry black guy? Because I'm not giving them that, you know.
And right.
So I'm just like, I'm chilling the whole time. And bro, I'm the nicest person in the house. Nobody.
I feel
has
like
no problem
Sebastian said a similar thing to me on the second season, that he felt that they were trying to push him to be the angry black man. And he felt a very, you know, like a real stand against it, you know,
that he thinks
actually possibly hurt his entertainment value, if you will, which also hurt his trajectory.
Right. And it hurt mine too, because once you submit yourself as a character, it's like they don't see the real you disappears. It's almost like when I watch your season, like you could have one incident, the incident you had with Nunez, right? It's like that's all people remember. It's like everything before and after that is kind of like, it's like whatever the highest moment you have on that show is who you are. So it's like
in my case, thank God though, because otherwise they would remember that leather faced portrait I did.
You feel what I'm saying? So it's just like, I'm not even remember for what any tattoo I did. It's just, that was my highest moment in the show. And that's what people remember me from.
Well, so this is also an episode where I wish we had a easier picture of actual demographics and how shows are doing. I know everybody always says theirs does this or that, but I've never seen any statistical proof. And I think it would make a dramatic turn at that season because of the amount of drama that they gave us and the amount of tattoos. The way it was scripted, number one, we got to strengthen the iconery image of Nunez and Oliver Peck as being great tattoo artists when we kind of know that they're, you know, average at best.
Right.
But we're going to do it because they can't fight it out themselves. So they have to have like princesses would have champions, you know.
That's a dope way to look at it. I never even thought about it like that.
Well, I think they came to, and there's this interesting thing they were going through at the time too, which, and I'm probably looking into this way too much, but the demographic I was explained at season four was 60 to 65% female is viewership. And that was the highest female viewed TV show on Spike TV. So to cater to that, you can imagine certain pushes and certain things would be a detriment, like the 2014 sexual harassment suit against the two judges.
Right.
And so I'm curious if the coincidence of your season and the desire to have a female representation, because if you just went through a sexual lawsuit that held your product reputation back, having
a female
reputation would be great. Right. Now as a thought, now that we're in a spot where they're shooting another series, right?
Yeah. And you got to do a minority judge now.
That's
you
what
gotta
I'm doing.
You got to do a minority judge or a female judge. You feel me? Because of what happened.
Yes. Or both.
Or both. And I'm sure they will do both.
And if they could get one that was transgender lesbian or something, I think they might hit the trifecta.
That would make their day. Yeah, that would make their day.
I remember when they were asking us from season three if we knew people that we could recommend. They really wanted really pretty lesbian tattoo artists. Mm-hmm. They were, and it was funny because we were like, dude, isn't that like the fucking, that's what everybody's searching for, man. That's the holy grail. It doesn't exist. Listen.
Right.
Listen, even if they say they're lesbians, it's just to turn their man on for a night. Once that wedding ring goes on, that licking and cocksucking, that's done. I'm getting far off point.
Go ahead.
Do you feel that there was any kind of the lawsuit? Were you aware of that? Did you feel any kind of push for female representation or backstage better treatment of the workers, maybe more importantly.
Yeah, I think that was a major part of it, and you felt that a lot. It was clear. It wasn't anything that was. It wasn't anything that was hidden. It was just you can tell the way they handled them. They took care of them, and I think their show was in the works before we even got halfway through our season. You know, so it's like they were definitely catering. I didn't know why they were pandering, but you just put that into perspective for me because I didn't know any of the other stuff was going on. But now it all makes sense. Like thinking back to how the house functioned and how everybody functioned.
Right. Okay. So, now, yeah, since they went through that's why I was curious if you're going through they had claims during my season, mm-hmm. they were being protested during our finale for not being unionized. If you're not being unionized, one of the bigger complaints that they have to level against you is things like harassment and having no recourse for possibly being fired inappropriately, being given too long days, no representation for these kinds of things. And so, that's why I would wonder on your season, did it seem as though they were being more professional or were you surprised by the level of professionality that they would treat the production, like the video, the audio and all?
I didn't really have anything to compare it to because that was my first season. So I didn't know what the normal treatment was or, you know, before I came. So I wouldn't be able to really answer that. Yeah, so I don't know how you guys got treated.
Well, we got it was there was a plethora, a mixed bag of like some of the staff slept with some of the tattoo artists. Some of them, one of them gave a guy a handy.
We were far away from that. So yes, if that's how it was on your season. Yes, and you could tell because there were some attractive cast members and people in production, but you could tell that it was way out of bounds. It was like they wouldn't tolerate. It was zero tolerance for that, and you could tell that they had been grilled on that.
Okay. Yeah. I think prior to that, it's really a reoccurring. Because I'm watching it make more money, and watching the production level go up. I'm interested how they spend it, the problems they face, but I don't know. I feel like that's probably enough about Ink Masters. Because I am interested as well, and you're still rapping to this day. Am I wrong?
Nah, yeah, I have something dropping in 2 weeks from now, like on the 24th. But it's been probably a year and a half since I've released the project.
Perfect time to let my millions and millions of listeners know. I'm glad I caught you just before a drop like that.
Yeah, and I thought this is going to be like my last year. I always said I wasn't going to be a 40-year-old rapper. I turned 40 in November. So what I'm going to do up until then is I'm going to release a project every month all the way up until November. And then I'm done. I'm going into something else after that.
Why would you not be a 40-year-old rapper? You just look like a creeper in the club or something?
It's just for me. That's just something I didn't want for myself. I feel like in every field, you have to make room for like fresh blood. You have to move out of the way. And I think that's an issue with a lot of us in our society is that guys who hold position don't want to move out the way and usher in the next. We're trying to keep them from rising and keep them from getting better. It happens in the tattoo world. We'll be tattooing for 20, 30 years, and we don't want to teach anybody anything. And by the time we leave the game, the people who are behind us don't know how to handle it. And they don't know how to, you know, we didn't, instead of taking them and teaching them what we know and making sure the industry is in good hands, we push them to the side. And by the time we retire, they come in and they don't respect us and they do what the hell they want to do. Now we're mad at them because the industry is out of whack, but we didn't do anything to affect that. So I feel the same way about music. I would much rather take a younger artist and coach them and help them and push them along because it's like, bro, I'm 40. Like, this is not a game for that. You know, I can do it on my own time as a hobby, but to be out here with 18, 19-year-old kids, I do feel like the old guy in the club. So it's just like.
Right. And the chances of you catching fire like that, even if you wrote the same exact song and then had a younger person doing it that would be maybe easier to get in tune with the kids or something. You're going to, it's going to go further.
Exactly. And what's sad about music though, what the genre that I do anyway, because in other genres, the older you get, the better your music is, you know, but in rap, it's like the older I get, the more wisdom I have and the more I have to say, but the less people want to hear it. You feel what I'm saying? Because it's just like you're the old guy on the porch. You know, I that's why I say I would take a younger artist and write for them and produce for them and put them in position to say what I want them to say, so my message still gets across and it's actually heard. It's effective, you know. Right. But yeah, right. Nobody wants to hear me, you feel me, at 40.
Oh, I do. And, yeah, like you're shaking your fists at the kids in the streets for not doing exactly. It. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so I would much rather like usher in the next generation.
You're doing something like you're part of. You're working with Made Rich as well in the Black artist experience. Am I wrong?
Yes. I'm not really tied all the way in with that. They call me and I do whatever they need me to do as far as helping out. But
okay.
The guy that really does that, his name is Swiss Premium. On Instagram at Swiss Premium. Shout out to him. He's doing major things. He's put together some dope events to help, you know, promote. So and
he's a cheese connoisseur or
yeah. No, he's a tattoo artist. He's a dope tattoo artist.
Right on.
Yeah, and he put together a bunch of events. So he's really the leader of that. You know, I was helping Made Rich more so push the Think Before You Ink brand and his clothing line.
Okay.
But outside of that, Swiss Premium is over the Black tattoo experience, and he's the guy pushing that. He's the one that started it, and it's growing.
Yeah, it seems
growing
to kind of come fast. Back. Right. It's full circle to what you're talking about with rap as well. As Rich was explaining to us, it's just that. It's giving back to people, whereas even though you didn't have people help you out, you needed it. You would have been better with it, and it's sharing in knowledge, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's completely necessary because what we always complain about the opportunities that we don't have, and we don't have those opportunities because the people before us didn't present them to us. So we're either going to keep this cycle going or we're going to help each other out. And I just think a lot of gaps can be bridged just by us looking out for each other. Like you're somebody who I talk to all the time when we're at the conventions and we have good conversations. And I think you and I are going to be end up being people that kind of bridge the gaps between Black tattoo artists and white tattoo artists or the tattoo culture in general. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because yeah. I don't mind being a bit of that at all.
Right. And we have the tough conversations. Like you and I can sit and talk about anything and I'm not offended by any of your opinions or any of the things you say. And you're not offended by any of the things that I'm saying. And on top of that,
you made me offended about, so I'm sorry, go on. I'll tell you about it in a minute.
Okay, cool. But like, even in being offended, what I was going to say, you're not listening and waiting for your turn to talk. You're trying to understand and you're trying to grasp the concept of the way I see things. And I'm trying to grasp the concept of the way you see things, even if I don't agree with you.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's what communication is all about, is being able to hear you and try to understand you, even if I don't agree with you.
Right. You've never offended me. I shouldn't make it like that. But you implored me to watch a movie, Adios to Say Adieu to Uncle Tom.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that movie was just offensive. You know, I mean, it's a beautiful, and it feels important, but it's one of those movies you're like, I'll never need to watch that. I get the message. I never need to watch that again.
And that was my same impression. It's like, bro, I never need to watch this shit again. You feel what I'm saying? So I get it.
Yes. And the understanding, if anybody does watch it too, it's good side note to understand that these are artistic representations that were made from writings. Like Adios to Uncle Tom doesn't have, it does have historical reference is what I'm saying. Like these, each of these instances, these scenes, vignettes possibly that this filmographer goes back to through slavery and is exposed to, has reference from writings back and forth and correspondences that have been found and tracked throughout the ages. And they're horrific and sickening. on a human level, let alone being on a white level. Like they can mm-hmm. give you large amounts of white guilt. So if you're not prepared for that, then stay away. But if you want a honest representation or a very intriguing, thought provoking look into the racism of slavery, then that was a good one. Made by the same guys that made Kano Mande.
And what people need to understand too, though, is that, bro, you can tell me a story, right? A fictional story that still can provoke, that can be thought provoking and make me see things from a different perspective. So even in watching something like that, even if a lot of things are inaccurate, it still makes you think like, damn, what if? And damn, that would be shitty. You know what I'm saying? And if so, so like you say, I think a lot of having conversations is, it's like you've been married for a long time, bro. So I'm sure you've had to have a lot of conversations with your wife to where you had to sit back, be quiet, listen, and try to gain some type of understanding to yes. you feel me, to be able to work together and to be able to stay together. There's a lot of shit that she probably says that you hate and don't agree with, but it forces you to look in the mirror and check yourself. And if you can put your ego to the side and put your pride to the side, you can find those things within yourself to fix them. But if you feel like nothing is wrong with you, you won't last in a situation where you have to work with other people, whether it's a marriage, whether it's society, you feel me? So it's just one of those things. Yeah, it's one of those things that where you have to be able to, like you say, watch something. And if you feel white guilt or whatever the hell guilt you feel me? You need to go figure out why you feel that and then address it. Then you can fix it. And then you'll be able to function. So
then the awesome thing or the good thing to know about white guilt is it dissipates with an understanding of white privilege. And even so, someone like myself, born in the hood without a lot of means, a lot of times we imagine there's no privilege that we experience from that. And it can actually bring about anger because someone's suggesting we have some privilege simply from the color of our skin. But when there is something like some systemic racism, or you have an understanding of how racist laws people would be raised through the ranks of executing laws and then giving judgment on those same laws, then you experience a societal privilege just from the color of your skin, because you're not having to deal with a statistic so high or disproportionately high of being incarcerated, getting bad education, having bad representation inside of the judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
And I think a lot of the frustrations, like you say, come from like not for me personally. I'm gonna speak for me personally. It's not a thing to where I feel some type of way because I don't have the privilege. I'm gonna give you an analogy that works for this. If you and I are in a race, right, and you get a head start, right, and let's say we get to the finish line, and everybody's like, "Damn, Kyle's so fast." You feel me? And you just play along with it like, damn, yeah, I am fast. And I'm just like, nah, bro, make sure you acknowledge that you fucking had a head start. That's why I was fucking miles behind you. You feel me? I'm not mad that you won the race. I'm just like, bro, let them know where you started and where I started. You know, just acknowledge right. that you had a head start. So it's not the fact that the privilege is there. It's just the fact that when the privilege is ignored as if it's not, as if it doesn't exist, and that we just had the same fair shot. And that goes for anything.
No, I feel like that's what dissipates it with the understanding of that, because that is just quite eventually, you know, and maybe hell, you know what? Still, I still am happy about this, that I might be able to talk. I have like a 1 in 3 better chance talking my way out of a ticket. Mm-hmm. So even if that's all the privilege I experience, then I know that it can help me, you know, or that there is that.
And I think when you reach some level of celebrity, you kind of experience what that feels like. I'll give you an example because you brought up a ticket. I was going through this small town. Speed limit was 45 miles an hour. I was going 90. Got pulled over. And when he pulled me over, you could see he got out the car all angry and shit. And when he got over to my window, I let the window down and he looked in the car. Now, mind you, this is probably 40 miles outside of my city. He looked in the car. He was just like, license and registration, but he's looking down at his pad at the time or whatever the hell he was writing on. And he was like, I guess it was the ticket. And he was like, license and registration. And I reached down to get it. And when I looked up, he recognized my face and he was like, aren't you Boneface? I'm like, yeah. And then he was just like, all right, man, I'm going to turn around and act like I ain't see you. I want you to get out of here. And then he let me go. And I, that's, for me, I was like, cool, I didn't get a fucking ticket. But at the same time, I felt some type of way. I'm like, bro, if anybody else was going 90 right here, they would have got a ticket. Write me a ticket too, motherfucker. You feel me?
I do. But at the same time, don't write me a ticket.
Exactly. I'm glad I didn't get the ticket, but I felt like, damn, like, is this, and my thought was like, damn, is this how white people feel? That was my thing. It's like, damn. So it was almost like a thing to where, like, if we're buddies, of course you're not going to lock me up, and of course you're not going to give me a ticket. But that, right. that's what's wrong with our system. It so should be a
does
thing
that give you a better understanding then of when you watch viral videos of white women engaged with police officers in disagreements? And you're like, that's the way that bitch, that's the way they feel. Like, they ain't going to get a ticket. Like, he ain't going to punch her.
Right. So it was crazy. And I was just like, damn, bro, like, that was wild. Like, I'm going 90 in a 45, and you just tell me, hey, man, I get out of here. I didn't see you. Just right. because you know, you recognize who I am. So it was just like, bro, like, that.
Did you
unfair.
Peel away? Did you burn the tires out leaving? Like, yeah, motherfucker.
Right. I definitely didn't learn a lesson because I got back up to 90. I'm like, fuck it. No. Like, I ain't going to take it.
No. Let's go back. He said, get out of here. He must have been fast.
Let's get back to 90. Shit, we didn't get a ticket.
Were you taking side roads or something? Where were you going?
No, I was on the interstate.
Okay, but it went down to 45 right there.
Yeah, it was like you know how you have these, you cut through small towns. It was like not just interstate, but you know how you cut through small towns, and then you kind of
they got the little speed trap town.
Right. Those towns. It was one of those little towns, and it's one of those towns that you're not supposed to get caught speeding in.
Okay, right. Yeah, the worst kind generally.
Right.
Where some hillbilly motherfucker comes out with a corncob pipe and shit. Now, you know why I pulled you over here?
It was that kind of situation, bro. And I just knew, I'm like, he's going to write me $1,000 ticket, bro, because I'm tripping. Right. And I deserved it. Right. I was like, I was ready to pay the ticket. I'm like, all right, cool. I know he got me. And he let me go. And I was like, shit. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah,
so, sure. But this was Ink Master fame. This wasn't rapping fame.
Right, this Ink Master.
Right on. What other things have you dabbled in? Or has that been it? Tattoos and rapping?
No, I was a barber before I was a tattoo artist. I was a barber from probably about 14, 15 until I was 26. But tattooing was something that I did as like a side hustle. Right. Then I owned a recording studio and I did the music thing.
What was the impetus to join Ink Master? Was it just you saw Ink Master growing and wanted to have your own brand out there?
No, I actually never dreamed of even thinking about applying for the show. I didn't feel like people like me got on that. You feel me? Just because of my level of tattooing. And I'm from a small town to where that didn't even seem like something that was real. Like, there has never been anybody on TV from my city outside of being a professional athlete. If you didn't play football, you didn't get on TV. Or you know, most time the most you would make was the local news, you know. So
I what moved city out to was Atlanta.
This is Pensacola, Florida at the time.
Okay.
But I was living in Atlanta part time. I opened a shop in Atlanta, and I had a friend that was a choreographer for a lot of dancers. She was a dance choreographer, and she would get these emails from different things and like modeling gigs and stuff like that. And she got one from a tattoo show, which was at the time Tattoo Titans. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
It was on CMT. And
everybody's been getting referred from that, it seems. Like, as that show was dying. Okay.
That's how it happened.
Was that over a year before? Was it a long process? Or?
It was a long process because I applied. She was like, apply. It's just an email. I'm like, bro, that shit ain't going to work for me. She was like, just give it a shot. I signed up for it. I got email back the same night. And then they did a Skype call the next day. And then they said, well, we feel like you'll be better suited for Ink Master. And they passed my stuff on them. And I started doing the interviews for Ink Master. I didn't get on the first year. They called me again the next year. I think it was season six is when they called me. And I didn't get on for season six. And then they called me for season seven. I didn't get on for seven. Then they called me for eight. And I told them I didn't want to go through the process again because, you know, you have to kind of clear your calendar just in case. And I was like, I'm not clearing my calendar a whole summer again when I'm making crazy money before Ink Master. I actually made more money before Ink Master. And
what was the effect of that? Just because you were hustling more? Or?
I was just I had the first, like, the most popular shop in Florida almost. I'm right by a military base, a school. So it was okay. Just like a thing that, yeah, so it was a thing, like, I was already crazy busy. So for me to take time away, I was missing crazy money. But they right. told me, like, yeah, just trust us and go through the interview process this time. So I kind of felt like I would get on in, and they finally called me.
So you were trying out for six as well, or they had you in the works for six?
Yeah, I was in the works from six and seven, and then I finally got on eight. And at the finale of eight, they told me they wanted me to come back for nine.
I didn't get to see any of nine. How was that treating you when you come back?
It was good, but it was just short-lived. Nine was dope because I got to meet a lot of the guys that I looked up to. Like, Tommy Helm was somebody that I looked up to. I liked Tommy Helm a lot. And he was a super cool dude. So that was dope right. being in the same house with Tommy Helm. Who else was in there? There was a bunch of guys, bro, because it was a lot of heavy hitters, because what it was is it was the Shop Wars thing. But what they did, they brought back, like, one very strong competitor, and then they brought back kind of a weak link. Like, so that was the thing. But I should have known how they were strategizing that when I picked my partner, you know. But
it cost you. Who was your partner there?
My partner was Hobo Ink, and he's a good tattoo artist. But the thing about it is that we're the same artist. You feel what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Like, if there was a field that we didn't do, we were fucked.
You didn't
so
do
when
it.
New school, yeah, new school day came, I was like, all right, bro, we did. Because the first day was black and gray, and we're in the top three the first day. And the next challenge was new school, and I'm like, we're dead. He had no understanding of color theory or anything. He was a painter. So I thought we had a shot because he paints at home, but he didn't know how to apply it to tattooing. So we were dead. We were dead out the gate.
Right. Yeah, no, there's definitely different, hugely different techniques to all of that.
Right.
Obviously, especially when it comes to new school, I myself have so little understanding of it. And people still sometimes want me to do it.
Right.
Are you now also doing everything? Do you do what people want? Do they sometimes force you into it? Or are you doing just your own tattoos now?
I'm not one of those. I'm going to do only what I want to do, guys. I just feel like people should be able to put whatever the hell they want to put on their bodies. And if they allow me to influence their decisions, great. But I do everything. You know, I work in a street shop, so you have to kind of be able to do everything people want. And even after right. the show, what really made me really go get good at everything, like, even after getting kicked off of nine, I went and learned how to do new school, you know? So,
okay. That was my next question, right? Where I was asking you, if you had a new school piece come in the shop, you're going to sit down and do it.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to do it at this point. Cause I want to prove that I can do it now, because that's how I got eliminated.
Right. Oh, that makes perfect sense. And also the sign of a true champion, I dare say, you know, somebody that's going to take their mistakes, stop making excuses for them, and instead use the anger that they have to teach themselves.
For sure. That's been my whole career, though. And I think that's what helped me with the season eight. I wouldn't have dreamed of being on that show that long with the skill set that I came in with. But I'm self-taught for the most part. So I'm a sponge. So anytime I see something once, it's locked in. And I like, my skill set changes overnight once I see something. So what happens is I go in the show and I'm there with Kelly Doty, Sketchy Lawyer, Gion, Ryan Nashley, Nikki Simpson. All of these guys are like crazy good tattoo artists. And I'm average at best. And I'm aware of that. I think self-awareness helps you on that show too. So
okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I go in, and as the challenges are, as the show goes on, I'm getting better and everybody else is getting worse. But I'm getting better because I'm soaking up all the knowledge, and I'm aware enough that I'm average to pay attention and learn while I'm there. So I'm learning on the fly. By the time I leave that show, I'm five times now. I'm well above an average tattoo artist.
Like a little crash course, a university of sorts. How long were you there for?
I stayed, it was 15 episodes that season. I stayed 12 episodes. So it was like 2 months.
And at the time you were running a shop in Pensacola, that's where you were born and raised as well?
Yeah. I was running my shop from my cell phone pretty much at that point.
So what age in Pensacola, Florida, did you decide to... The art was a thing for you? Were you just always drawn?
Yeah, I've been into art since I was a kid. I was supposed to go to art school, but my son came. I was supposed to leave to go to school. The summer I was getting ready to go to school, I had a baby on the way, so that made me stay. And I started tattooing. I started taking tattooing seriously. I opened my shop when I was 24, and it's been open ever since then.
Right on. Then the tattooing was the impetus for. I'm sorry, I'm getting a cramp here, Candy. We have to edit that out. So tattooing was the impetus for your rap career then is getting bigger. Am I wrong? Weren't you able to put more time and energy into that after you had resources coming in from tattooing?
Yeah, for sure. But I kind of went further away from it because it's like once I started elevating this tattooing, the show came. And what happens is, and we live in a society where people aren't going to let you be more than one thing. If you're a rapper, you're a rapper. You can't be a rapper and a tattoo artist. You can't be an athlete and a rapper. They're going to accept you as one thing and that other shit. Like, they don't want to process all of that. So
you're just bagging on Shaquille O'Neal right now. He could rap. He was a good rapper.
But nobody, but when you think of him, you don't talk about his music. You feel me? You talk about his basketball. Yeah,
so I do, like, because I thought that was awesome. He had the Shaq Newkins or something.
But if you had to hire him for a rap feature or to be on your basketball team, damn sure ain't hiring him for a rap feature.
It would have to be a twofer or something.
Right, exactly. So that was the thing. I somehow became I was the rapper that was trying to tattoo, and I somehow it flipped. I became the tattoo artist that tries to rap when rap was my thing. But I think rap went away for me when I had my son, because it's a dream, you know, and it's something that you can bring the reality if you put enough work in it. But I didn't believe in gambling my son's future on the dream. So I went with tattooing because it was more concrete.
Right. You decided to forego school because you needed to be there for your child. Absolutely. So it makes sense that you forego this as well. Because to really do it right, you just, you have to be on the road. You're not going to be able to do it. Well, maybe now. Do you have more? Have you seen a greater push from these platforms that you have, like TikTok and all, for yourself? Or hasn't that been your focus?
I hadn't. I'm like, bro, I think I'm turning into the old guy. I used to be the guy that said that I would never let technology pass me. And it's like, it's too much. I can't keep up with it. I don't have a TikTok yet. I have one, but I don't know how to work it.
I don't even know how to work all my eight tracks.
Yeah, I don't even know how to work Twitter, bro. And I'm like, damn, I let it pass me. And it's just a lot of work to keep up with it.
I understand. But these are the things, even if, as you move on to teaching other kids, that's the part that you would almost, I would wonder, you wouldn't want to pay attention to the most.
Say that again?
Well, it seems like as you're helping kids navigate the business now, that seems like it would, well, actually they're probably going to come in with enough knowledge of that, but it seems like that would be the thing that you would want to help them with, or that you would be able to help them with some the most, is getting them distributed.
Right. And that's difficult for me because it's moving so fast that I don't even know how to get myself out there like that. It's becoming difficult for me. And then all of these platforms are now becoming monetized to where, even if you're on them, it's not helping you unless you're spending money. So it's all going back to the way it started. Yeah.
Yeah. I was excited for a while about Twitch streaming. And I was growing a little bit of what I thought was popularity, but when you really look into it, it's a bunch of hocus pocus, and they dangle dreams in front of you. They make you think you're making achievements, but they're so close or so far away from making any money that they're minuscule. And even when you do get the money, it's like you're gambling at the house. The house is going to win.
Absolutely. You're right. And by the time you get the money, it's crumbs based compared to what you should have for the time that you put into it. You know, so
now this is indicative of society too, then.
Absolutely. I have friends that are athletes, and you know, when these guys, they play sports their whole life, and then they come and they get their contract, and it may be 20-30 million, and everybody's coming with their hands out, and I explain to them, like, bro, that 20-30 million is back pay. You played basketball from high school, from little Pop Warner to high school to college, all the way up to this level for free. So all it is back pay. It's like, you don't owe anybody. You just, the whole time we've been working and we've been getting our checks every week, you hadn't been getting yours. So now when you fucking turn 21 and they sign you to the league, you finally get your check. And all it is an accumulation of all of the money you didn't get on the way up. So we're coming. It's almost, you ever been in a restaurant and your wife's food comes out before yours and she eats, and then your food comes out next, and then she feels like she's entitled to some of your food because hers is gone. And it's like, yeah, you ate. So it's like, it's my turn. So, but it's like people still feel like they're entitled to what you have or to be a part of what you're doing when they've been eating their whole life.
The lottery.
Right, right. And it's not that way. So that's the same way it is with this. It's just like everything is coming back for me.
I got to figure that really draws the line in between people too. When the, if people start approaching you as you get fame or fortune that they are aware of, and they're your family members and distant cousins, they start approaching you with their hands out. That's going to make you really withdraw a lot, right? Just from your own family.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I just feel like it's one of those situations that where if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. I don't want to be forced or pushed to do anything. It's just, I'm going to do it on my own time and when I feel like it, and if I feel like it.
So what is, since Ink Masters, your exposure to the show, how has that affected you in going forward in life? Now, were you working with Caesar at all at one point too?
Yeah, what it was is that, I felt like Caesar was in control of the before the Black Tattoo Experience and all of that. I felt like Caesar was in control of the identity of Black Tattooing, and it was by default. It was by default because he had the biggest platform,
right?
You know, so I felt like because he had the platform, instead of trying to create another platform, you feel me? What I wanted to do was go
work within that one.
Work within that one and influence that one. So I went with him to help protect the identity of Black Tattooing because I felt like it was dramatized and it was not about tattooing and we were still looked at in a certain light, but he had the platform to change that. So I went to work with him to be in a position to affect change, you know? It wasn't really about an opportunity to be close to him or be famous or anything like that. You know,
right?
Because I didn't even like try to capitalize off of the Ink Master fame. It was just something that was just there, which I probably should have, but I didn't.
Now, to change that, you have to approach it by to change the I'm sorry, but to change that, you need to be able to affect things outside of your own circumstance, right? Yeah, like you can't you. He's still in control of it. Were you working? You weren't contractually working with him, were you?
No. It was just more so. I was
and VH1 doesn't want a difference. They're not ready for you to showcase tattoos. You would have to showcase tattoos now.
Right. And this effect was aimed to be outside of television. I didn't really care about the television part because Ink Master does the same thing with tattoos. You feel what I'm saying? It's dramatized. It's really not about the tattoos, but his effect was also outside of TV, you know? So that was the part that I was trying to help with more so than anything. Like when we went to the tattoo shows, like I wanted to be an artist that could be a part of his circle that was winning awards because they weren't winning them. You know, it was like they weren't looked at as good tattooers. So if we could go to a Villain Arts Philly and get a first place trophy, that was major. And that changed the way people looked at you, you know? So I was more so on that end of it, just trying to bring good tattooing. And he was the one that the spotlight was on. So I'm like, well, let me take some good tattooing over here to the spotlight where it's at so they can see that we do know how to do this shit.
Are you guys still working together?
We're still cool, but we're not working together anymore.
So you're just back like down in Pensacola or you've got a place in Georgia now?
I bought a house in Georgia, but my main shop is in Pensacola. I have a private studio in Georgia. But yeah, like we stopped working together a few years back. It's just that like within like on the personal side, not between me and him, but just the way things were going, I felt like it wasn't effective. So I just kind of went back to doing my own thing.
Okay. Right on. I don't know. I keep on looking at any TV show with Quality Ink being shown on it, and all of them go through the same process, it seems, of watering down the tattoos and amplifying the drama until eventually there's nothing that really that you can watch that has, you know, there's a nice feeling that people get at home. You, me, I think, and the average person, too, when they see a tattoo come to life in front of them.
Right. Right. But you know, people like, who watch TV, people who watch TV don't want to see good tattooing though, bro.
No, they typically like to see really, really bad tattoos.
Yeah. Some of they the think most they famous do, but they tattoos don't.
From Ink Masters. Certainly the ones that people remember the most from me are the ones that, that either I did really good at or I did really, really bad at.
Yeah, it's the same reason why people love the Joker and not Batman. You know, it's just like we don't come here to watch you be successful and to watch you win. We go to the races to watch the cars crash.
Right.
Not to watch them go fast, you know. We just want to we come to see a wreck. You know, we go to fights to see a knockout. So that's the way TV works, man.
You were on Team Peck as a champion of Peck, basically. But now I call him Little Racist Ollie because I'm just that kind of asshole, I guess. Since that's come out, has that changed your opinions of it? How do you feel? Do you think there was any effect on you on the show as a black contestant that might have correlated with his possible bigotry or racisms?
No, honestly, no, I can't say that. Not me personally. Maybe other people have experienced that, but I can't put that on them. I'm going to be honest and say that, like, I didn't have any issues with him, though I can tell, like, my thing is, like, your preference and the things that you desire and the things that you like have nothing to do with me. Just as long as you respect me, like, you can be a racist. You cannot like black people. But my thing is just, like, as long as we are respecting each other's space and, you feel me, you're not doing anything to me, we're fine. You feel me?
Yeah. As long as you stay in the middle of Florida instead of Pensacola.
Yeah, I'm like, bro, it's cool if you don't like black people, bro. Just don't, you feel me? Just understand. It's like I'm cool with people saying what they want to say. It's just be okay to take the consequences of whatever the fuck you say. And it's just he said what he said, or he did what he did, and he had to face the consequences for it. And I don't feel sorry for him for that. But at the end of the day, it's just like I don't have I don't feel any type of way. I don't have it doesn't anger me or anything like that. Like
more
I don't
apathy.
Right? Any. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really care. It's like, if that's who you are, bro, that's who you are. Just you got to face the consequences for who you are. So
right.
I don't. Yeah, but he didn't rub me the wrong way at all until the finale of season 9. That's when he actually outwardly did something that made me feel like, damn, this dude is really like he bugging. Now I want to say so. Now I want to punch him in the face. You know, but
that
before
was
then,
when he took offense to you and other artists taking a knee during the national anthem being played by Dave Navarro. Is that correct?
Right. And see what that was, what that does to me is like, just like I said, I have no issue with you. You feel me feeling or expressing however you feel. But my issue is when you have an issue with how I express myself, I let you express yourself. Right. Now let me express myself and right. We're even, you know? So I think, and that was something that none of us came with. What's funny is that one of the white cast members came and said, hey, we should all grass arms and take a knee. And I'm just like, fuck, all right, I'm with it if everybody else is doing it, whatever the fuck, because I didn't have I don't have a feeling about the kneeling in the protest. I ain't give a fuck about it. If you want to kneel, kneel. If you don't, you don't. Like, you feel me? Because at the end of the day, none of that shit is going to change how people feel. You feel me? It's just going to change how they act, what they show. You feel me? So if you're a racist, you're going to be a racist. I would much rather you outwardly be a racist so I know to stay the fuck away from you versus you being a closet racist. So I'm cool with you not liking me. I just know to stay the hell away from you, you know? And it's just people have this thing to where they prefer a snake creep up in the grass and bite them versus the grass being cut and seeing the snake approaching, because you have to deal with the fear of watching the snake approach you. You feel me? Versus it sneaking up on you and catching you by surprise. So it's like people don't like to blatantly see things. Like you can't take a woman on a date and sit at the table with her and say, hey, I'm going to buy you some food. I'm going to be nice to you. And later you're going to give me sex. You're never going to get laid that way. You feel me? So you have to disguise it. You have to sit there and pretend that's not what you're doing. And
she knows that's what you're doing. That she doesn't see you.
Exactly. You feel me?
Sneak and that's okay.
Right. So it's just like, that's how people are with things like that. With the thing that happened to Ollie, it's just like, bro, clearly y'all seen that this man is of that, of you can, it was evidence. You can kind of tell, you feel me? But it's just like, because it never was said or shown, it's not happening. It's almost like when athletes give interviews and they give the politically correct answer when we clearly know how these motherfuckers feel. But they, right. they just say the thing that they have to say, but you clearly right. know how they feel.
I'm contractually obligated to feel this way about this.
Yeah.
I get it. Now, yeah, then so. when you saw, you didn't feel one way or the other taking a knee. When you took a knee and you saw his reaction, did it kind of dawn on you, not necessarily how racist or that he was a racist or whatnot, but there was what a trigger this was. I shouldn't keep saying racist, but what a trigger this was for so many people. Was this the first time you had seen it and considered it like that?
Yeah. And for him, more than anything, it wasn't even that he was triggered. I was fine with that, you know, because I felt like it would make him uneasy, you know, because I kind of felt like I knew his character, you know.
Okay.
But the issue was that when he tried to incite that same emotion on everybody, he tried to put that same emotion on everybody else. When he went to the audience and he tried to hype them up and make them a part of the way he felt, you know, when clearly they didn't feel. Yeah, they didn't feel that way at first, because when it happened the first time, everybody applauded. But then you come on the stage. Yeah, so he comes on the stage in between takes and says, "Anybody that does this is a fucking coward." Now they're like, okay, we fuck with Ollie because you're an influence. You feel me? So you've influenced these people. So now
that's what he said. Was he said coward?
He said anybody that takes a knee in front of the flag is a fucking coward. And he dropped the mic and went back and sat back. And he came out of his way to do this. He wasn't just on the stage. He came down from where he was and came on the stage and did it and said that and then went back to the podium. And then everybody in the audience is like looking uneasy, like maybe we shouldn't clap. And then half the people who kneeled in the first take, like everybody kneeled the first take except Clean Rock won, which we respected. Like, I still talk to Clean. I didn't feel any type of way because Clean decided not to kneel. I'm like, bro, you have that right. Just like they have a right to kneel, you have a right not to. So, boom. So he was the only one that didn't kneel. He was just like, I'm not doing it. And I respected that. You feel me?
Yeah.
But then what was crazy is after Ollie said that, it was time to do it again. And only like 5 people did it. It was the black people. And I think Aaron was the only person who did it. Yeah. And everybody else
recounts it as well.
Yeah. So it was just like, it was weird, bro. And I was just like, damn, like, do you realize like what you, and I don't think people realize, like when you have fans, bro, you have fans that are more serious about you than you are sometimes. You feel me? Yeah. So if they see that you feel some type of way, they'll go out of their way to prove their fandom. So I was like, you put a lot of people in danger with that whole move, bro. We're in an audience to where we all can reach each other, you know?
Right.
And
right.
I thought it was a weird time and a weird space to do that when you could have expressed that to people beforehand. I mean, off camera, just like anything else you do. But then I approached him after that and I told him he was a bitch basically for doing it. You know, I was like, yeah, bro, that was some bitch ass shit. You feel me? And there was that. But
what was his response?
You know, he kind of was just like, yeah, whatever. He's like, you know, he kind of was like in passing. So it wasn't really
He was happy to blow it off because he felt his conviction was correct. Now, I have to pause for a second to take exception, because my understanding is that I have tattooed before. It's a very iconic tattoo to see, is the image of a soldier with M16 and boots in the ground representing a fallen soldier and an American flag over top of it. And the other soldier is taking a knee in front of that. That seems like it's an iconic image that I've seen repeated over time and time, which seems like someone like Ollie would have known of the image. And for him to say anybody who takes a knee in front of the flag is a coward, it seems like these people that he's also impugning legions, you know, of army people are obviously not cowards for the flag. Like that is how you show respect for fallen members of the army, armed forces.
And what people ignore is that that's how it came about in the beginning. The guy called Kaepernick, when he first did it, he was just sitting during the anthem, and a military veteran called him. He flew him in, they had lunch. And the guy said, it would be more respectable if you took a knee. That's how the knee started.
I believe that story also was that he suggested the reason behind it was because of using the knee to show respect for the officers, or of the military fallen officers.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then I think, and what it is funny because what Ollie did is the same reason. What he did with that flag is the same reason why people hate Donald Trump so much, why Black people hate Donald Trump so much. It's not so much that Donald Trump is a racist. It's just that when racists adopt you, you feel me? You become their symbol, and then right. It makes you look bad. And it's just like anything associated with you is that because these people adopted you. It's just like a lot of flags. You like, if I take a flag and I do some wild shit and I use that flag as my symbol and I stick it in the ground, it doesn't matter right. What the original meaning of that flag was, it now means this. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they flip the narrative of what everything meant. And that's what it was, because we weren't even like, our thing was, we're doing this to show we're all together. It had nothing to do with anything else. You feel what I'm saying? And it was like I said, a white cast member's idea. And when we did it, it's just like he made it about something else versus coming to us and saying, hey, like, trying to get an explanation. It's just like you wanted to be offended.
Right. Is the kind of along kind of the line of Macy Gray suggesting that we change the flag because so many people are adhering to the flag that seemingly or even are openly racist at points, or say racist things, or enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
And people adhering to it, it almost ruins that thing.
Right, but the thing about it is, if you change it, bro, people are just gonna find something else to represent what they do. So it's like changing one thing doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't help.
I think it's a terrible idea. You're just gonna give racists a icon that is time honored and loved. You know,
right?
They can help separate people. Flags are oftentimes bad enough because they divide us. But sometimes the flag, if it unites, that's where it's beautiful. And that's kind of the beauty of our flag, is that it is for the racist, and it is for the most equal or the one of us propagating the most equality. You know, it's the same flag. It's for every good and bad individual inside of America.
Yeah. And I say this as a Black person, and it always sounds weird when I say this. But, bro, I just feel like people should have room, and they have a right to be racist. You have a right to be whatever, because if we really live in a free country, everybody has to be free. Because if I come along and start telling you what you can say and what you can't say, what flag you can fly and what flag you can't, guess what? Sooner or later, you'll be coming for my flag, because it's like tattletaling. That's why that's why snitching isn't allowed in the drug game. It's because once it's almost like one of those things, like once I tell on you and I get in trouble for it, you feel me? Now that takes away all of my privileges, all of the things that I want to do, I can't do now, because if your flag offends me, all you have to say once they take your flag is, okay, well, his flag offends me.
And no matter what next? It means.
Right. Now, which one's next? Right. Now, before you know it, we're all silenced. We all can't say anything. That's why social media is such a weird place now, because you can't even curse on social media without getting flagged, because everybody's complaining about everything. So before you know it, we live in the pillow soft society where you can't do anything and everything is governed. And what happens is that even like, so if I'm a parent and both of my kids are fighting, right? And I gave them free rein before they started fighting. When they started fighting, I took privilege from him. And then I took privilege from my other child. Guess what? Before you know it, I'm the dictator and nobody has power but me. So that's what we're doing in this situation, is we're giving all of our powers to somebody else to make a decision for us. So before you know it, we're not making any decisions on our own. Right. So that's why I say it's important to allow people to be exactly who they want to be, especially if they're not harming anybody. And if you are harming anybody, the consequences that come with that, you should have to face those and live with it. You feel me? So it's just like, you hit me, I hit you back. That's why I think it makes sense
because eventually you almost have to trust that people are educated enough to recognize ignorant speech and ignorance when it is, or at least that they will give you a fair opportunity to defend something that is ignorant. Because generally, 100% racism, almost all based on ignorance.
Right. And that's why they say back in the day, they said that the Wild Wild West was the most peaceful times because everybody had a gun. You feel me? So I just think it's one of those.
I've heard that. I've also heard statistics, though, that well refute that a gun was a large expenditure of money when it wasn't needed. And actually, it wasn't prolific in the Wild West at all. The cowboys themselves, there was rarely ever anybody with a gun. It was most often a rifle, if anything. They wouldn't wear guns themselves while being on a cow or a horse because it could accidentally go off, as they routinely did, and it could frighten the whole cattle and cause a stampede. But
right. But even another analogy that works is just like in the MMA in the fighting gym, like an MMA gym. That's probably one of the most peaceful places on the planet because everybody can fight. Everybody can fight. You feel me? So it's just like that's one of those things where if everybody has their rights to be free, then you have peace. But when you start taking shit away from people, you have problems.
If everybody did have a gun, you would feel relatively confident that very few people would be doing crime. And ironically, they've come out with a statistic now that I believe shows something of that, that if police are not doing a successful job of making their constituents, or I don't know if constituents is the right way, but their public feel safe, that place is much more likely to arm itself with guns and oftentimes illegal guns. As a result of many different things. So like then gun crime, of course, can go up in that same kind of area, but it's based on your level of fear of being protected. So in that case, it kind of supports the theory that the world's a safer place if everybody had guns. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the kindergarten would be like, but I know there'd be a lot less rapes at the church.
You're trying to get canceled already, man.
Yeah, the priests would be they'd be popping up dead a lot. I'm sure they got that thing figured out anyways. Moving on to season 9, that season itself was with like a plethora, like a whole hodgepodge of Ink Master stardom, right?
Correct.
And did you see an increase also in the expenditure from your paintball, your powder paint gun day, your tag game to that the next year's? What did you guys do that year?
What did we do? We did it was something about the same level of dramatic. We were in this built this giant warehouse somewhere, and they set up a bunch of these different stages, like art stages. It was like a prop house, and they just had us destroying stuff in the prop house and throwing paint everywhere and shit like that. Yeah,
right on. Another fun day though.
Yeah, it was definitely another fun day.
When you come back, were you better at it? Is understanding, like having the camera on you, responding to the producers? Did you feel stronger against things? How was it like coming back?
Oh man, I think had that been a situation to where we were individuals, I could have made it to the finale that season. I just was that confident and that strong, and I knew how to play the game. It's just dangerous for them to let you come back when you learn how to play that game, because that's all it is a big game.
Right. But, I knew think you I was could ready, have controlled the storyline that would have kept you propelled.
Absolutely, and I would have done it without taking it so personal. I think. That show, if you're somebody who, like, I'm not someone who knows how to act or be different. I'm gonna always be the same person regardless. So even when those cameras came on, I didn't know how to fake or play along or be a part. I was just me. When I came back though, I understood how to give good TV and what to say or when not to say it. And like you said, and how to talk in sound bites and how to do things and how to articulate myself and express myself and how to use that show to catapult myself. I just wasn't there long enough to like really take advantage of it the second time.
How has it been since? Were you able to harness any of the fame then? How's it been since with Ink Master stardom besides getting off on speeding tickets?
I don't really do much, bro, to really know. I don't go outside much. I don't go out to bars and shit. I'm more of a go to work and go home guy. So I don't really see much until I go to the conventions, and that's when you kind of feel it the most, and it's still there. And I think because I had such an iconic moment in the show's history, like you, it's like they never forget you. You kind of become synonymous with Ink Master, you know?
Right. And Nunez, I hope they keep him on, because without him, I'm nobody. It's sad to say, but
I think they got 12 seats. I don't think it goes anywhere, bro, because it's just, I think if they had to put together a compilation of iconic moments, both those moments would always be in there and they would be top 10.
Right, right. But if he's not famous, then, well, I guess at least the show would be. Hopefully that show goes on. I sometimes run into people who are really bitter about it. Obviously, you're not. Myself, I'm not as well. It was like a longest running advertisement for the thing that I do as a, you know, I would have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in advertisement that it gave me.
Right. Absolutely. Like to be on a commercial for 30 seconds is major, but to be on TV for 30, 45 minutes, you feel me, an hour every week is insane with commercials running in between. And now they're starting to put it on Netflix, which is insane because that's the world. That's not just an isolated audience. It's like everybody. Yeah. And it's, and
well, you're on Paramount right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure if they have it on Paramount. I'm not sure.
I thought that's what I know I was watching it on.
Yeah, I was watching mine. I got mine on YouTube, but I don't know if it's on Paramount. It should be. But that Netflix is crazy because Netflix is something that when everybody turns their TV on, that's the first thing they go to. And this is all across the world. And it was every time they post a new season, it goes to number one. So if my season goes back up, just like yours did, I'm sure it re-sparked your whole career too. Even though you're probably already doing well, I'm sure.
Well, I got a lot of friend invites right afterwards. Yeah. Unfortunately, people want to see me sometimes. I have to have the old picture of me behind me. It's like, it's been a little while, man.
Right.
Motherfuckers aging. I don't like to work out the same.
it's the same for me too, because I don't even look the same. It's just like people, I damn near need to have to like put a picture of that moment on my banner for people to know, like, all right, cool, that's that moment, because people are more familiar with the moment than they are with me.
And is it almost humiliating to have to, because that's what I feel about having my picture behind me, but I remember that I remember how I want to be down to earth anyways, so I might as well get humiliated. Yeah, I'm pandering to you. There's the sexy Kyle behind me with the blonde streak.
Yeah, you got to give him that, bro. And I just like at the shows, how they all we have the guys that like used to be in movies from like the 80s, and they're like 70 years old at the booth with a picture of them from the 80s, and they're signing autographs and taking pictures. It's just like at the end of the day, bro, you got to be able to put your pride to the side and understand that it's all a money grab.
And you see yourself doing that years later, years from now?
Absolutely not. Absolutely, I would love that. I'm absolutely not. I'm afraid of it now. You know, I like you say, it's like I'm hesitant to like even put a picture of me from the show on my banner. It's just like me now. And if you don't know who I am, I'm like, I'm sorry. But I understand people who do. I understand, like, but it's just like I've put myself in a position to where I don't have to do that. You know, I try to.
Right.
Yeah, I try to like make sure I'm ahead, like I stay ahead financially so I don't have to sacrifice certain things.
What gave you this foresight? Your parents still together? Were you raised by both your parents? You sound like a well-constructed individual. Somebody somewhere seems to have done a good job with you.
Man, I just think I was blessed. My mom has 10 kids, so there's no way you can raise 10 kids the proper way.
You could let them one mile.
Yeah, and that's what we did. But that's what we did.
Crap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we did. We ran wild. And I think I just was blessed enough to be put in a lot of situations and circumstances that and around a lot of influential people. Like I played sports, so I had coaches and teachers and all of these people who I was influenced by. But right next to me, maybe my younger brother who didn't have those influences, who's completely opposite. So we're all so different because we all did run wild. And the environments that we were in raised us. I just was fortunate enough to land in some good environments with some good people. They kind of molded structure. Me and made me right. So I landed in some good spaces. I'm thankful for that. Basketball. I played basketball.
Right. 140 pounds. It's 6 foot. So that might not be a football career.
No, that's definitely not. Not at all.
Unless you got a strong defense or offensive line and you're the quarterback or something. But yeah, you're going to need an arm. Yeah. So basketball kind of gave you structure as well. What place in the 10 children are you? Somewhere in the middle, your bottom, your top?
I'm in the middle. I'm number six.
Easy for you. Marsha.
Exactly, exactly. So it's like you missed the relevant at that point, and it's just like 5 kids later, it's like by six, nobody's even coming to the hospital anymore. It's just kind of like, all right, yeah, she had another one. Yeah, what is it? It's a boy. Oh, okay, cool. What's his name?
I'll see it at his first year's birthday party.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, so it was just like one of those situations.
So you then that's probably also possibly what attracted you to art was the structure of that. Because it's an environment that you know kind of gives structure to chaos.
Yeah, it was definitely that. That was my escape because with art, I was able to be anywhere. I was able to pretend I was anywhere. I was able to create that place on paper. And that was my thing because I was raised in probably one of the worst neighborhoods in the history of my city. And on top of that, my mom was constantly in an abusive relationship. So it was my escape was to go sit in the corner somewhere with a pen and pad and create. And the best thing that ever happened to me was one of my stepfather's brothers. He was kind of well off and he would come by the house to see my stepfather. And he seen me drawing one day and he was just like, but I'm drawing with like just ink pen on notebook paper, like from school. Right.
With lines.
And, with lines, right. So he checked out a couple of my drawings. He was like, you're pretty good at this. And the next day he brought me some coloring pencils and a sketch pad.
Blank paper, yeah.
Yeah, and I started drawing and he was like, every time you fill it up, I'll bring you another one. So I would fill him up every week and he would bring me another one every week. And
you still see that guy?
He died earlier last year. And I didn't even know. I just found out he died like last month. I found out that he died last year.
Would you have liked to have gone to the funeral, huh?
Man, absolutely. I just would have liked to thank him because he was responsible for me pursuing art because it was just something I did, but he made it something that I fell in love with.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because there's always, you know, to me, generally, there's always somebody or an impetus somewhere that really gave people the, you know, hey, go ahead. That's so awesome that somebody would go that far, too, though, to get you a new pad every time you would fill it up, like to have a running contract with you. So were you turning the papers into him, kind of? You were showing him completed ones?
Yeah, I would always show them the completed ones and I go to school and sell them. And what's funny is that I had a kid in the barbershop that was in with his mom and he was drawing and she was like, he does drawing a lot. And I'm looking at his art utensils and I'm like, damn, like he got some shitty equipment, you know, but he's doing a good job. So I told her, I was like, bring him by my shop. And, you know, Ink Master gave us a bunch of supplies and stuff that I never really used. So I was like, bring him by my shop and I got some stuff he can have. And I gave him all of the stuff that I got from Ink Master, all of the sketch pads and the expensive coloring pencils and shit they had, I gave them to him. And I told him the same thing. I was like, every time you fill it up, somebody did this for me when I was a kid, I'm going to do it for you. Whenever you fill it up, you bring it to me and I'll give you a new one. And we've had that ongoing thing since then.
He's brought you some then? He's shown them to you?
I bought him one set. I hadn't seen him yet. I gave him enough stuff to probably last him for fucking a year. That's why I hadn't seen him again yet. But I followed him. I followed his little Instagram page so I can see that he's doing his thing.
He's working with it. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's got to feel good. I don't know that I think, because now that I think about it, I feel like I come across some of the old art things I got from Ink Master. I'm like, oh, look at this, pencil sharpeners and a bunch of pencils and sketch pads I've never used. Now everything's on tablet. You're drawing on a tablet too yourself, right?
Right, absolutely.
Right on. It seems like that's going to really progress the next levels of design for tattoos is the tablet and the kids' understanding and their familiarity with it is going to so far exceed what we can do or not what we can do, but what our familiarity is with it, you know?
Right, right, right.
Until at least the breakdown of society and we have to go back to making our own needles again.
Yeah, that's what I. That's funny. That's funny you say that because I think that's going to definitely happen to where we got to start over again.
And they're going to come back to us like we shunned you before, Kyle. We shunned you before. But what we need the information now. Did you ever make needles when you're younger?
I was. I learned how to do all of that stuff. I learned how to put together, build machines, make needles, everything.
So who teaches you that? You're self-taught, but you have to learn that somewhere, right?
Yeah, but I'm self-taught, but I did get a mentor along the way. What I did when I opened my shop, because I was so terrible, I was just like, shit, if I want to learn, the best way to learn is just to hire artists who are better than me. So I opened the shop. I had the money. So I was like, shit, I got the money, and they don't, but they have the skill. So I hired a bunch of guys who were better than me, and they became my mentors. Like Jeremy Miller is one of my mentors. That's where I learned the most from. Yeah. So
he's based out of Pittsburgh. Am I wrong?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He wasn't.
Different
he was
Jeremy one of the guys. Miller, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. He was trying to, I was actually trying to bring him back as my teammate on the Shop Wars season,
right.
But they didn't choose him. He was my first choice, but they didn't use him. But he taught me everything I know as far as machines and needle making and all of that extra stuff.
Definitely an art. I remember trying to chase down that knowledge myself without somebody to get you in the door on it. There's a lot of trial and errors, but you've burnt your fingers with acid flux. Then have you mixed pigment too?
No, I haven't mixed pigment yet. No.
Right on. I haven't myself. I'm just testing your level of preparedness for the zombie apocalypse. we're going to be at the gates being like, but I can tattoo. And they'll be like, we don't have any ink. Like, I can make ink. We'll take the one that can make ink.
Yeah, I'm telling you. That's funny.
Right on. Well, brother, I think I've stayed too long and said too much, which is kind of my sign off more than anything. I can hear we've been here for a minute. It's been great catching up again. I look forward to doing it in the future. But do you have anything we should plug before we get on and about get off?
Yeah, man. I just came out with I have this supply company, Easy Grips. I started that back in 2012. I just released a new brand of needle cartridges called Luxury Tattoo Needles.
I do know this, and I feel like an idiot for not talking about it earlier. Actually, I forgot that you were affiliated with. I knew that. That's where I was trying. I knew you're an entrepreneur of sorts, and so I wanted to open that door, and I stuck on rap. I apologize, brother.
No, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, because I've used your batteries. You were one of the first people to have those available for us, and that freed up. That's the big leap and bound of tattooing.
Absolutely. I think that's something that I'm probably never going to get credit for, but I was definitely the one that inspired the wireless battery pack. I think even before the battery pack came out, I was wireless back in 2009, 10, which was a long time ago.
Wait, what?
Yes.
With what? One of those H2 Ocean machines or something else?
Nah, it was.
Had a big heavy thing.
Nah, this was, I think it was the free wire machines. They came out, it was a coil, but it was wireless. It was heavy as hell, just like you said.
Yeah. And I remember. Yeah, that wasn't it wasn't H2 Ocean, but they helped promote it. I think it was a joint project with Eddie, the owner of H2 Ocean, and Tony Olivas and Jack Rudy. They had a whole computer on board so that thing could.
Yeah. It was cool, but it was at the time, I don't think I was as advanced enough of a tattoo artist to really appreciate it or know how to use it, you know. But what I did do was I took the technology and kind of took the technology to another level, and I started working with the guys in China because I was already starting needle cartridges then. And needle cartridges were just getting popular then. And,
but you didn't really take the technology then, really. You took the idea almost of it more.
I took the idea, and because I was cool.
The need for it in the market. I'm sorry to straighten that up, but I was like running over and thinking, well, that sounds like it's liable.
right. Yeah, so it's just like I took the need for it, basically, and I told them instead of a whole machine, because what you had to do is buy their whole machine. And I was just like, well, people don't want to switch machines once they get comfortable with their machines. So I'm going to come up with something that you can just attach to the machines, because we've all been doing wireless tattooing before we know it. If you tattooed back in the day and you had a prison machine, that was battery operated.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like I wanted to create something that was more like new school version of that. And I started sending them over there. I actually had the patents and everything for it. But what happens is if people change something enough, the patents aren't really relevant anymore. So people start making their own changes to it, but it was definitely the first person to have them made. And another thing that happens when you do stuff in China is that once you send them ideas, they start making them those ideas for themselves. And once they start doing, so it's like they would beat you to the market.
Then they're going to flood you to the market. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
It's like making a deal with the devil, especially if it's something new or innovative.
Exactly. So that's what it was. And so they basically They tried to beat me to the market with my own product. So I ended up competing with my own creation. And then FK came, the other companies started coming and doing their own thing. And they had a lot more money than I did. So, you know, it was kind of hard to keep up once it became a thing.
But you still have Easy Grips, and now you've got a new cartridge that you're starting with them, or you've already got it in production and all?
It's already out. They're on the website. I just put them up last week. So yeah, that's the thing that I'm doing now is the new cartridges. I went back to cartridges. That's what I started with, but I went back to those because it's something that people will always need more of. It's like just like you got they're disposable, so you got to buy more when you run
What's
out.
What's the website for Easy?
It's EZGRIPZ, Easy Grips with a Z. .com.
Right on. Yeah. Anything else from my brother?
That's it, bro.
All right. I apologize about being, obviously I'm like, my mind's kind of like a dog chasing a squirrel. So I apologize for jumping all over the place. And man, I do feel bad I didn't get that out earlier, because that's the kind of stuff I like to lead with, is all the advances that you've done for the industry itself that maybe you won't ever get credit for. But, you know, I appreciate it at least. Thanks for the jetpacks, brother.
Man, I appreciate you, bro.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, man.
All right,
bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.